Well, the theme today has been women in aviation, and we're going to continue that. We have some fans down here. We're going to continue that tonight with a panel discussion with some very famous names in aviation. And to host us this evening, we have Dr. Peggy Chabrian, who is the president of Women in Aviation International, and a name that is a household name, and that is Martha King from King School. So please join me in welcoming Peggy and Martha.
I think you're going to have a fun time this evening. There are some great women with some fabulous stories to tell, funny ones and poignant ones about why they love to fly and how they learn to fly.
And I think we have a unique combination of the pilots who will be here this evening. So let's go ahead and bring the first one out. Our first panelist for this evening is Dawn Seymour. Dawn is one of the WASP, Women Air Force Service pilots. She was one of the lucky 13 WASP. Come on out, Dawn. Dawn was one of the lucky 13 WASP who flew the B-17 in World War II. She flew approximately 700 hours in the B-17 based out of Fort Myers, Florida. And Dawn, I know you have some of the other WASP here tonight, and they're not going to be on the panel, but we'd like to recognize them. They're sitting over here. If all the WASPs would please stand and be recognized. And in case you didn't catch the news broadcast, just, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago maybe now, the president signed a bill in the White House honoring the WASP by saying you would be receiving the Congressional Gold Medal of Honor. The ceremony, I understand, date hasn't been set yet, but they said sometime this fall or in the winter, and I'm sure the aviation press will be putting the information out about that. Certainly well-deserved, and thank you, ladies, for all of you being here with us this evening.
Our second panelist brings the military component of the panel up to date, Lieutenant Colonel Jill Long. Jill flew A-10s on 50-plus combat missions in Afghanistan. She's currently stationed in Italy, and just this most recent November completed Army Airborne training, showing the guys a thing or two. I can say it, I know you can't. And on her days off, she flies air shows in a Pitts S-2B called the Ragged Edge. She's been flying air shows for the last 3 years, but this is her first time to perform at Oshkosh, which she did this afternoon.
Our next panelist is certainly no stranger to Oshkosh. I understand she started performing here back in 1984, Julie Clark. Now, most of you know Julie from her aerobatic flying and their beautiful T-34, but she also spent 28 years flying for the airlines and just retired about 2 years ago, I think, from Northwest Airlines as a captain. So again, please join us in welcoming Julie Clark to the stage.
Our fourth chair is for Jessica Cox, who is caught in our notorious Oshkosh traffic. And we hope we'll be able to join us a little bit later on, and I'll do her introduction when she's on stage here to hear it.
Yeah, when you get ready to come back to the theater in the woods at night, I think you need about 2 hours to get off the grounds and back on again, it seems like. Well, our first question for this evening, we'd like to ask each of you to answer this one. Now, we have some specific for some of the panelists, but this one we'd like you all to answer. What inspired you to learn to fly, to start taking flying lessons, or maybe what was your first flight experience? So whoever wants to start with that one.
Well, Well, since I'm the eldest, maybe I should start. I was asked if I had ever been flying by a gentleman who had, I had volunteered for an experiment, and he had done all the scientific materials. And he said he was going to be in charge of flight research for a program called Civilian Pilot Training. This is at Cornell long ago. And sure enough, he took me up on a golden October day when the air is full of sunshine in the yellow cub over Cornell campus and Cougar Lake. And all of a sudden, I realized that the world was boundless. Boundless? Boundless. Here? And so began a journey. And I will tell about it later. Thank you. World War I pilot. Now, I'm bringing to you tonight the continuum that will go to Jessica as a youngster. So it's exciting for me.
Thank you. Julie?
I guess I should answer next since I'm the next oldest.
Julie, before you start on that, let's introduce Jessica.
Oh, all right. Hello, Jessica.
Those of you who were at the fabulous gathering of Eagles last night may have seen some of Jessica's life, but she got her black belt in Taekwondo, her first black belt when she was 14, and her second black belt when she was in college at the University of Arizona. She has an unrestricted driver's license, does everything, considers that she is not at all, considers that most of us are, if you will, disabled because we don't have the imagination and courage that she does. She's a professional inspirational speaker, and you can see why. When she started learning to fly not that long ago, she was doing pretty far along in her training when she ran out of money, and Able Flight gave her a scholarship. And so this most recent October, she got her sport pilot license in an Aircoop 415C. And your final training, I think, was done at PC Aircraft Maintenance? Okay. And so we're going to have some good questions for all of them. And let's give a nice welcome again to Jessica.
And Jessica, Julie, we had just finished the introductions, and I had just asked the first question, and Don had answered, and Julie was getting ready. And the first question is, what inspired you to learn to fly, to start taking flying lessons, or maybe something memorable about your first flight experience? And Julie was getting ready to recount her.
We are doing this in order of age. I'm a daughter of an airline pilot, and my first flight was with my dad in a DC-3. And then after I went and took one day of flying the line from San Francisco up the bay, up to Oregon, like Medford, and then back to San Francisco, down to Santa Maria, Los Angeles. And it was just such a great experience. And I remember thinking, what a cool job, flying people around in an airplane. I was only 8 years old, and then my actual first flying lesson, unfortunately I lost both my parents as a teenager in accidental accidents. And so when I took my first flying lesson, I actually took some college book money in Santa Barbara. I rode myself across the Goleta Freeway in college and took my first flying lesson, and that was my first experience ever in a little airplane, was my first flying lesson, and that was in the 60s. And it's never stopped.
Never stopped.
Never stopped. I still, when they talk about here at Oshkosh as a passion, I truly can say that is my passion. I don't know how to cook. I get a panic attack in the kitchen. And flying is, that's where I belong.
Well, I don't know how to cook either, Julie.
Oh.
But I married well. He cooks well.
Oh, that's good.
The first time I can remember thinking about flying and wanting to do it is when I was about 6 years old. I was at an air show and at that time, I thought it was the biggest air show on the face of the planet, but apparently I was wrong. Wichita, Kansas, which is not a small town, but it's still... And I remember seeing the Thunderbirds fly, and not saying that just because I'm Air Force and they're awesome, but it was just so amazing to watch them. And I remember getting so excited, like I so rarely do, and say, "Mom, Mom, Mom, someday that's going to be me." And this guy behind us, he must have been 6'4", he looks down at me, he's like, "Girls don't do that." And my mom is all of maybe 5'2¾" if she's on her toes. She turns around and she starts, "Don't you dare tell my child what she can and can't do." And I remember looking at her and looking at him and thinking, "Dude, you are so grounded." And all the way home, she kept telling me how, "Hey, you want to do something, you make sure you do it, because if you ever, ever back out of it because someone else told you no, well, you're going to have me." And I'm like, "That's enough, Mom. That's enough. I'm going to fly.
Jessica?
Okay. May I have one mic? Okay. Oh, okay. I'll just use my... I just realized I'll just use a lapel mic. Okay. Well, actually, Eleanor Roosevelt once said, "Identify your greatest fear and walk directly at it." And so for me, flying was my greatest fear. And from a very young age, every time I'd set foot on a commercial airplane, I would do so with fear and trepidation. And so for me, when I actually was offered to take a flight by Robin Stoddard, he was the founder of a nonprofit called Right Flight, and he asked me if I'd like to fly. I didn't respond right away, but my dad happened to be standing right beside me, and he jumped right in and said, "She would love to." So I didn't really have much of a choice then, and so I went on to my first flight, and that was about less than 4 years ago. And that was my first flight in a single engine.
This next question I'm going to direct first of all to you, Jessica, and that is, what support person or group helped you most in reaching your goal of becoming a pilot?
There were two groups. One was Right Flight that started me out on my first flight lesson, and the second group was Able Flight. And there was one group that was behind me 100%. Able Flight was there, and the pilots who graduated from the program as well, they actually emailed me and they contacted me and were of support. So I am very grateful to Able Flight and Right Flight.
Okay, Julie, is there a particular person or group that gave you particular support?
All I ever wanted to do was be an airline pilot. You know, we kind of have goals, like you were like talking Air Force and Thunderbirds. And I just wanted to be an airline pilot, and my hardest thing was through lack of funds and my parents to support me. The hardest thing for me to become an airline pilot in the 70s was my gender. I always tell people I had indoor plumbing, and that was keeping me from getting
getting an interview. I've never heard that one before, Julie. I'm going to have to remember
that. Outdoor plumbing. And I remember this Captain August, he finally hired me as their first woman at Golden West Airlines, which is the commuter airline I flew in 76 before I got on with the major airlines, which today is, I'll say Delta, Northwest Delta. And I was hired with Hughes Air West then a year later. But I would say Captain August, he made me jump through a lot of hoops, you know, through the hair cutting deal. And then finally I took this check ride with him in the Twin Otter, just the two of us one-on-one, where all the other guys were going up in a group of guys. And then we came back, and then he still was saying, "Well, we still have one more problem." And it's like, gosh, like what? And he was saying that there wasn't a door in the men's room, and he wasn't sure how we were going to handle that going into the ops office on the ramp at Los Angeles International Airport. And I got right on his desk and I said, I will buy a door, I'll even install it. And I used a couple expletives that I recall. And I sat down and I said, "Oh my God, I'm really sorry. I'm just so frustrated." He goes, "You know, I like your spunk. When can you start?" And I thought, oh my God, it's taken us 9 months. And I finally had to act pissy, and I finally got the job. But he was the first guy that believed in me, and women were not airline pilots in 75, 76. We were just breaking into that door and opening it up. So I would say Captain August, he's now deceased, but he gave me my break.
So did you have to install the door yourself?
We had a code. When you walked in, you knocked three times, and I guess they even did it when I had my days off, and you'd have to say, "Julie." You know, and so they never had the door, and I never looked. And I just walked in. So they were even saying, "I don't think even our janitors are female. I don't think we've even had a female in this ramp office." And this is back in the days when where you got all your paperwork was an office on the ramp at LAX. So.
Jill, it sounds like your mother might have been one of your strongest support groups, but in addition to that, was there some particular person or organization?
There was. You're right. My mom has always been there every step of the way telling me, you know, quit whimpering, get out there and do it. But it has to be my first flight instructor, and that was Ralph Riddell. I was 15. I had fudged on my employment application at a local grocery store to get a job. And my first paycheck, I was so excited because I was going to get to learn to fly, because my mom had always said, when you earn money, you can spend it however you want. So I rode my bicycle out there, and I remember watching all these beautiful airplanes and this beautiful old wooden hangar with all the dust and the parts, aircraft parts everywhere, and it just, you know, grease and dirt, the smell, oh God, the smell was fabulous. And they had so many airplanes, they had a prop off of one and it was flipped up with the tail in the corner and the wings up, and I'm just like, oh, this place is heaven. And up comes this old Taylor craft and it spins out doing this really cool wheelie thing, and out comes this grumpiest old man you ever met. And he walks up and he's like, what do you want? I want to learn to fly. I really want to learn to fly and have money. Can we please go do it? And he looks at me. He's like, and I'm thinking, oh, I don't sound like a pilot. And he's like, get in. And I was like, get in? He's like, get in. So he let me in that airplane, and we've been flying together ever since. And I owe it to him.
Fabulous. So, Don, I'll bet you've got some interesting stories about people who helped you and supported you.
Well, you'll be surprised when I tell you it's the U.S. government.
I'm not surprised.
We're from the government and we're here to help you.
I'm taking you guys way back to 1939, before World War II. And there were very few pilots and very few women pilots. And the U.S. government, through this interesting person in the CAA, said that we could have a program. And the program would be this, that the local FBO would supply the pilot, the instructors, and the gas, and the planes, and the local colleges would supply the rooms and the professors for ground school. And so it happened. And for $6, for a physical and $34 for insurance, this is came to be. And I was accepted because of this man, my World War I pilot friend, Dr. Richard Parmeter, who was director of flying research. He wanted to figure out what made a good pilot. Could you do it with testing beforehand, or did you have to go through this process of washout? And he said, I have a lot of data on you, you're healthy, and would you like to, you heard me say. So the U.S. government, and my little instructor, I was not a student, I was an instructor, I had just graduated, said to me, Dawn, she was about 5 foot tall, and I'm here, this, you know, big girl, and she said to me, now Dawn, you have to be here between 8 and 5, so that meant no ground school, and I had to fly before just when the sun rose, so I'd only get 20 minutes in the winter, so that's how it started. But the perseverance, and was soloed on skis, and away we went. License, May of 1940.
Oh, that's great.
And you still love it every day, don't you? You still love the flying every day, the aviation.
Don't forget, yesterday, I came in on a Widgeon, which is dated 1946, and flew directly from Rochester, New York to Oshkosh with Barry Hull.
Well, Martha, I know we're the moderators, but something just came to mind, and I'd like to share it and maybe answer this question, too. As a new student pilot learning to fly in Chattanooga, Tennessee, I got involved very early on with the chapter there, Chapter 150, and they were very supportive and very helpful. Every monthly meeting, they would share, the home builders would share where they were on their projects, if they were, you know, wood dope and fabric, or anyway, where they were on their individual project. And I just sit there, and finally they said, well, what are you doing? Well, I'm not building. Well, what are you doing? Well, I soloed last month, or I'm getting ready to do my first cross country. And they were very supportive. I just wanted to, since we're here at Oshkosh especially, to share that the EA chapter was very helpful for me when I was getting started out. Well, Don, I've heard you tell the story before, and I'd maybe like you to share it. Share with us, what was the reaction of some of the men when the ladies first arrived at Avenger Field, when the Wasps first came?
Avenger Field was pretty good because we had already been established and the instructors knew us. But the field that was interesting was in Florida. It's called Buckingham Army Air Field. A field is not as substantial as a base in World War II. And there were thousands of people on this field. It was the largest training field in Florida. It's a gunnery, flexible gunnery school. We learned how to fly the B-17. We were first pilots. We learned in Lockburn over here in Columbus, Ohio. And we were sent there as pilots to do the gunnery missions. And we were objects of the greatest curiosity, stares, the funny words, you know. And in those days, there was nothing politically correct. But we survived, made good friends, our ratio was, I don't know, minuscule to thousands.
Now, Jessica, I know this is your first time here at Oshkosh, so I wanted to ask you tonight, what's your reaction to a first-timer at Oshkosh?
Well, it's actually all I expected and more, so. It's incredible. It's been an experience. It's kind of like coming to a family of pilots. And for me, ever since I started flying, I feel like everyone has been behind me 100%, and I'm just appreciative of all the support from everyone here, and I've enjoyed it. It's been an experience of a lifetime.
And Julie, I'll ask you next. I know I'm going out of order here. What would be a favorite Oshkosh experience for you, or a memorable one, or a funny one? Something here at Oshkosh.
Memorable? Oh my gosh. I've been here every year since 78. They're all so memorable, and I've met so many wonderful people. I guess when the Concorde came, I think that was in 86, I had just done a show up in Duluth, Minnesota, and they raffled off tickets so the winners could go ride in the Concorde. And so I bought 10 $1 tickets, and I ended up winning a ride, and they were saying, wait a minute, she's an airline pilot. And so I'll never forget the captain. Captain Cook said, she bought a raffle ticket just like everybody else, so I got to ride in the jump seat. So then when he came here, and their show was right before this show here, he welcomed me back again here, and I had just flown with them over Lake Superior because I won a raffle. So always buy your raffle tickets for a dollar. So I would say that's one of my really memorable times with coming after I'd just flown in the Concorde. And but there's so many wonderful things like White Knight 2. How awesome is that airplane? And of course, the Airbus. I retired off the Airbus. So so many wonderful people, and I love the Warbirds. That's where I'm always hanging out if I'm not flying in the show.
And Jill?
There's two things. Of course, today was probably the most, I'm still kind of up in the clouds. Flying to my first air show at Oshkosh is a dream come true. And to be able to do it with all of the great people who've inspired me. And in front of my dear friend, the Wasp, I couldn't ask for anything better.
I know.
You know, and that's kind of the selfish reason. But the reason that I really love Oshkosh, or why it's grown in my heart so much, is that the Women's SOAR program, my first exposure to coming to Oshkosh and being on the grounds, was the first Women's SOAR. And the number of women that I met there, as well as the girls, amazing. And it just does your heart good to know that there's hope, inspiration, dreams, passion, and it's all about aviation or space or engineering or math. And that it's all coming from these fabulous women. And it's so, I just love the program, and I love coming back year after year to do it.
And thank you for doing that.
Jill, I'd like to back up just a second to the issue in the military of how the guys reacted to the women coming in. and have you talk about your own experience. And then you had a great story, Jill, about the when you asked someone how many women were in their squadron. And if you could talk about both of those.
You're talking to me.
Jill.
Oh, Jill, I thought so. No squadron stuff.
When I first came in the military, I was the only girl in my pilot training class. And people could tell you on one hand how many women were in pilot training. And quite honestly, it wasn't as big of a deal as everybody made it. It was just, there were so few of us. And so it was pretty easy to say, yeah, there's five of them here. And I went back to NGET, or Shepherd Air Force Base, and was a T-6 instructor in 2006-ish. I'm not very good with dates. Wish I had that. But I showed up and I asked somebody in one of the flights, I said, you know, how many gals are in, you know, training here at Shepherd? And he looked at me and he's like, Barbara, Betty, and that German girl. And they had no clue. And I just kind of sat back at my desk and I went, we're there.
Yes.
We're there.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
And Don, what does flying mean to you? What did it mean to you through the years?
It means freedom. It means freedom. It's a sense of leaving the ground and going into another space and going up and down in boundless horizons and beauty. And I came across a letter. I'm reading all my old letters from World War II. And I'm finding that when we sold the AT-17, which is the twin-breasted cub, we called it, just two girls, I thought it was cozy. And then as we flew around, we saw these wonderful cumulus clouds. And in between them were hiding little black clouds because the light had not penetrated. And all at once, there'd be a rainbow. And what more could you want than to see something so beautiful?
That's fabulous. And Julie, what's it mean to you, flying? What, you know, you fly here, you do air shows all over the country, you flew airlines for a long time, but what's it mean to you personally to fly?
I have to agree with Don on the freedom part of it, and the beauty of, I think the wonderful flights I used to like, flying out of Minneapolis late at night or coming out really early and seeing the Northern Lights. This Northern California girl had never seen the Northern Lights until I was based in Minnesota. And,
oh,
I mean, is that not the most awesome thing when the sun has gone down and you see these Northern Lights? And the other part of the freedom part is I was told today when I was talking to the gals in the hangar the other day for the women's soar, they came over and we showed them our airplanes and stuff. I can't remember who came up to me today, and I'm thinking it was you, but somebody came up to me and said, I can't remember who it was, said, see what happens when we get older, you get to look forward to this. She said, Julie, the folks at Virgin Atlantic Airways were watching you in the hangar yesterday, a couple days ago, and they said, she took one girl at one time, there's 85 girls on the wing of her T-34, showed her the cockpit, took a picture, and I said, oh yeah, that was like opening a can of worms in a way that I knew it was going to take a long time. But they were saying, we don't have that freedom in England. We watched her, we would never be able to pull something off like that in England. And here we are, so you talk about freedom, we have the freedom of flight because we can. And I'm still so proud of that, and I hope things don't change on that arena. We seem to be fighting and losing a few of these security rights that we take for granted when you just land your airplane and get gas at your local airport. We're hoping we're not going to have to do the security badge deal, but yeah, I know, we got to fight that. And I live on an airport, and I live on two. I'm such a spoiled brat. I always tell kids, you can teach a monkey to fly, you just can't teach him to drive to the airport. So I live on two airports, and the kids usually don't understand the joke, and the adults always laugh. But I live on a grass strip in the summer, and in Cameron Air Park in the winter. And I just, when I want to go somewhere, I jump on the T-28 or my T-34, and I go visit my family and relatives and friends. It doesn't get better than that. You just, and I still get excited every time I pull my planes out of the hangar. And I'm not kidding. I love to fly.
And you know, as we all know, AirVenture here is such a perfect illustration, such a perfect conglomeration of all of those feelings, because the freedom to walk among the airplanes, to see, to learn, to meet your friends here, to meet family here, and have the camaraderie and the closeness is something we all cherish. Jessica, is there a particular emotion or feeling that flying gives you or arouses in you that Dawn and Julie haven't already touched on?
I think for me personally, flying is the ultimate form of independence and empowerment, especially that moment when you're soloing the airplane and you're the pilot in command. You realize that you are a pilot in command of your life, and that changes you forever.
It does change you forever. You know, I was being interviewed one time by a magazine writer who said to me, and it was a question I'd never gotten in quite that way before, why do you fly? And the context, it surprised me. And it just right out it came, because it makes me feel competent. And that's what flying does, Dawn.
I'd like to add to that. It also humbles you. It's one of the arts and skills of flying is that landing. And if you don't make a good landing, it lasts with you. Oh, I could have done this. And, you know, why did that wheel come here? So that's the challenge of flying, and I think that's terribly good for the spirit.
We're all there with you, Dawn. We've all been there.
Yeah. I always say it's a good thing my airplane can't talk, because it can't talk and it can't read. And what goes on with you and your airplane are between
stays
you and the airplane.
You.
Yeah, it stays with the airplane.
I'd like to sit in front of 500,000 people.
I'd like to pick up on your word about the camaraderie that's here. One of the things, of course, we've been celebrating Women Venture all day today. We started out, we had the breakfast over the Nature Center, and then the wonderful photograph taken on Aeroshell Square with all the lavender shirts, the sea of lavender today, and of course now tonight with the evening program. And people have asked, well, why are you doing this? Why is EAA and Women Aviation, you know, putting on Women Venture? And I tell people there's two primary reasons. One is the camaraderie. There are a lot of ladies who are here. They come every year to Oshkosh. They're volunteering. They're flying. They're in all aspects of the convention and doing a lot of things. But we hardly get to see each other. We're all kind of scattered around. So it was so nice to come together and get a chance to see each other. And just with the shirts and walking around today, you could identify, oh, yeah, there's another woman pilot. There's another person, and stop and talk to them. And then the other reason why we're doing all of this is to encourage others, some of you who might be out there tonight, to think about maybe going home and taking that first flight lesson. Or maybe you've always thought about getting your pilot's license, but wasn't quite sure what the right time was. Well, maybe now is the right time. And that's part of why we've been doing this today and last year also.
Yeah, you bet. Dawn, go ahead.
I was going to give you advice from my grandmother. You know, that would go back long ago when I was a little girl, but bear with me. I'd seen a movie about being in a mine, and the water came up, and the couple were, you know, there was no water, they kept higher and higher. And I said to my grandmother when I came home from the movie, I said, I'm never going to go in a mine again, ever. Well, she said to me, I said, I'd be afraid. And she looked at me and she said, Dawn, she said, more people die in bed than they do any other place. Don't be afraid.
None of us are going to sleep tonight.
Well, as I think, as Jessica said, flying in a sense is about conquering our fears of the world out there and our fears of ourselves. Are we going to be able to do it or not? And by doing it, gives us that freedom. And as you said, Jessica, it changes who we are and how we think about ourselves forever. It makes us it turns us into different people, into people that have the ability to go up into the air and remove ourselves from the problems and the fears of the earth and change our our thinking and our emotions and just become at peace and just have this wonderful sense of appreciation for the earth and for our freedom and our ability to fly. Jill, you want to add anything to that? I can see you.
I was going to say, I just wish I had your grandmother standing behind me at the door of the C-130 when they had me jump out of that airplane for the first time. Because I was afraid. I was really afraid. But then the minute the chute opens, and the Misty Blues, I met them today, and I just, what a beautiful feeling. And there's nothing like, you know, beautiful blue skies and, you know, and cool breeze to make you feel just so alive, even if it is jumping out of a perfectly good airplane.
Well, your planes were probably better than most of the GA airplanes people jump out of.
I was going to say, I took my first parachute jump a year ago with the Golden Knights, and I think I'd rather still fly with the Misty Blues, where they jumped out of my airplane, and I did that at an air show. But it still was a thrill, but I'd rather stay in the airplane. And when I'm flying, especially when I'm in the air show and I'm listening to my music, I'm zoning. I'm so in the zone that I'm just totally in a world of my own. And I'm not even thinking about anything except what I'm doing. And it's just a wonderful, exhilarating feeling.
You know, for those of you who may have someone who might be interested in flying or are yourselves thinking about learning to fly, a fabulous resource is Women in Aviation International that Peggy is the president of. They're located in Hangar B. You can stop by, get some literature, get some information. I can tell you that both John and I are members, and it is the most it is the organization, the aviation organization, that we are most excited to belong to, because it's got the most passion, the most energy, the most enthusiasm and support of anyone that I've ever seen. Their website is wai.org. Part of what Peggy and the organization do is accumulate scholarships from people who are interested in supporting more women in aviation, and they award those scholarships at their annual convention, which is coming up in Orlando in February.
Right.
And they have given in scholarships since 1996, $6 million in scholarships.
Thank you.
This year, they gave $495,000. They even have, and this is the one that I just couldn't get over, they have a scholarship for people who don't get scholarships. And so if you apply for one of the scholarships through Women in Aviation and you don't win one because maybe you didn't quite fit the criteria of the scholarship sponsor, there is a scholarship that is offered. The General Chuck Yeager Foundation and Women in Aviation International Scholarship that is chosen from the people who applied to Women in Aviation but did not win one of those scholarships.
And General Yeager is a wonderful friend to Women in Aviation, has been for many, many years, so we appreciate his support.
He's a very strong supporter. Yes.
Well, we wanted to leave some time for questions, I think, right, too,
okay.
And we're getting a little short on our time. So we would like to take, if you have some questions, those of you in the audience, we have a little time for that, so I see somebody there with their hand up, Steve.
We have mics down in front here. If you want to hold your hand up, and we'll bring a mic around. There's one. Okay.
There's a lady right here.
We just love your aerobatics. When you're doing your aerobatics and the announcer is talking to you, and I think I would be wanting to concentrate. Is it hard for you sometimes to carry on the banter with the announcer while you're doing this incredible flying?
Well, Julie, did you hear that? How do you carry on the banter with the announcer while you're doing your air show act?
That's sometimes tricky, and I'm not only, that's the one time I'm taking a break after a lot of the G-pulling, and so I'm trying to catch my breath, and then they're calling me going, okay, just get my breath going. And then I like when they do banter, because I'd rather do something definitely ab-living than something that's, something that's choreographed. So that gives me time to climb to altitude and Like I tell people, give a blonde a microphone and I'll talk forever if I'm trying to get some altitude going.
I thought that was a fighter pilot.
Yeah. Oh, that could be it as well. Yeah.
This is for the oldest. I forgot her first name, but
Dawn.
I was just wondering how many wasps were there in in the war, and how did you tolerate all those men and the attitude?
how many wasps were there?
Well, 25,000 women applied for the program, believe it or not. 1,830 were accepted as cadets or flight trainees, and 1,074 graduated from Jackie Cochran's program, which was held in Houston and in Sweetwater, Texas. And Nancy Love had 28 applied, and about 25 actually were flying for the WAFs, which was in Newton, in Delaware. And so that makes about 1,100 altogether. And of that number, perhaps we're dwindling down to less than 300. And I must say that the seven of us who are here today are thrilled and enjoying every minute.
Are you going to be doing autographs afterwards?
Are you going to be doing autographs?
Oh, absolutely. Set up the table.
I think there's another presentation after ours, but we could go off to the side, outside somewhere. Yes.
Thank you for asking. We're very pleased.
Dawn, I have a question for you. There's a lot of stories about the WASP messing with some of the fighter pilots while they were ferrying planes. Did that really happen?
The active verb was messing. Honey, that word isn't in my vocabulary. But I must say that I did marry a lieutenant in May 1944, and I must say I was very happy.
I think we have time maybe for one more before the next. Yes.
My name is Christina Hu. I had 38 hours under the belt a while back, but for, you know, job reasons, everything, I kind of postponed it a little bit, and I started to think I'm too old to start. Is that age that too old to start aerobatics? Before you answer my question, I want to thank you all for being inspirational to us.
Thank you.
Well, if you're wondering about whether you're too old to start, John and I had a good friend who just died very recently who learned to fly when she was 64 and got her instrument rating when she was 68. And she did a fabulous job.
And once you start doing aerobatics, you'll never want straight and level again.
Be careful what you start. Well, I want to, and Martha also, to thank all of our panelists for being here tonight and being part of this whole women venture. I know we've kept you all running the last several days, and we really appreciate it. And thank you to all of you for being here tonight.
A wonderful audience.
Thank you very much.